Hi, and welcome to Art and Inspiration here on Radio St. Pete. I'm your host, Brenda McMahon, ceramic artist and owner of Brenda McMahon Gallery in Gulfport, Florida. Today, we are talking a bit about the world of ceramics with pottery icon and ceramic artist Jan Richardson, who is celebrating her sixth decade of working in clay. Jan Richardson discovered her love of clay in 1960 and went full-time in 1973. By 1977, she began Windy Meadows Pottery and built her architectural ceramic business to garner an award-winning reputation. Each hand-built ceramic house was filled with remarkable detail. To help her keep up with the robust sales, at her peak, Jan had 30 employees helping her in her clay studio. After 30 years selling at juried art shows and creating an impressive body of ceramics, Jan shifted to new work. Today, Jan Richardson lives in St. Petersburg, Florida, goes to the studio daily, and teaches classes at the Morian Center for Clay. Jan, welcome to Art and Inspiration.
Thanks. Wonderful fun to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. It's so good to have you. There's so much to talk about. One of the things I want to start, because this is not a clay audience per se, is that your career trajectory happened at one of the most exciting times through the art pottery movement. So in the 1940s, there was a rejection of mass production and the burgeoning studio arts movement started, and you started in the 1960s. So all of the big names, Peter Volkis, Robert Arneson, Judy Chicago, Betty Woodman, all these amazing figures were coming up and making fabulous work. What was that like for you?
Well, I was at the time not as aware of that whole group, actually, having taken a break to have babies.
Yeah.
So I picked more of it up after I started doing the clay houses and just going to every conference I could. We used to go to something at Penn State called SuperMud, which has now evolved into a huge event called NSECA. And a lot of the big boys were there, the big boys and the big girls were there making pots in front of us and firing their pots in front of us. It was fascinating. And there were just so many new ideas and people growing in wonderful ways.
Yeah, boundary breaking and doing things that people didn't do with ceramics before.
No, yeah. They certainly didn't.
Yeah. So how, before that then, how did you go from mom to potter? How did you find your way to clay?
I just had to work in clay. I found when we settled and the kids were old enough, I started taking classes again. And I started building the clay houses. I lived in a rural area that was old Civil War era with lots of wonderful old houses and barns. I really like old barns. Mm. And they're saggy and they have funny colors because of weathering and use. And I just had to make them. And so it was perfect for the materials I was working with, the colors of the clay, the way they were fired, all the little factors that make such a big difference in how the clay comes out.
Yeah.
And I built two gas-fired kilns at my farm in Maryland. Wow. Because that was so much more beautiful than, say, firing the pieces in an electric kiln, which doesn't have the pizzazz.
Yeah, it definitely has a different flavor. We have one of your houses in front of us, and because this is radio and people can't see it, there is a remarkable amount of texture and personality in these houses. And like you say, the roofs are undulating and moving, and I'm going to just say what I see, but I'd love for you to describe some of the elements that mean a lot to you.
Well, one of the things that was really important was getting the textures and having it look old. And the only way to do that on a shingle roof is to put each tiny little piece of clay on one by one.
And that's what you have.
It looks like
a shingle. It's a moving shingle roof.
You kind of Because if you made them perfect, like a real roofer would,
yes,
they wouldn't have any life.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of, as you make the piece, you kind of twist the clay around.
Yeah.
This particular one has, the shutters are made with a clay that I dyed, and then the little quilts that are hanging from the porch are actually individually made. I painted each one of those separately.
That's right, and they look like clay quilts. You've got an awning made of clay with this texture, and it looks like someone lives there, and they're hanging their quilts out to dry. Very beautifully painted.
It's a fun thing you see up in Amish country.
Uh-huh. And that's where you were living when you were in
Maryland.
It was
close to Amish country.
Yeah.
And then the chimney, I took little lumps of multicolored clay, scrap clay, really, and just made little rocks and pushed it onto the chimney. The roof lifts away.
Yeah.
So that people would put candles inside them.
Oh, very nice. So talking about how place inspires art, how did that come about? Were you driving around and you started
seeing
these
houses? I was definitely driving around. We lived in a rural valley near Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, and I would drive the kids to school. It was 12 miles up the valley.
Oh.
We could look across from the front porch and see the Appalachian Trail.
Oh.
It was neat.
Oh,
nice. It was wonderful. And on both sides of me were houses that had been there pre-Civil War, big houses, and stone walls and wandering roads. I would find even Civil War bullets.
Oh, wow.
By the stream.
Cool.
It was definitely impressive and fun and wonderful to drive up and down. And I drove the back roads a lot,
too. Oh, yeah, back roads are great.
Because they were great.
And you were about an hour outside of D.C.?
We were an hour out of D.C. and Baltimore.
Yeah. So you start making these fabulously textural houses full of personality, and you start doing art shows, and people really like them. And
they
so
love
it sounds
them.
Like your business grew from you making some houses to, at the peak of your 30-year ceramic career doing art shows, you had 30 employees who you taught, I trust.
Well, they didn't all make the clay houses.
Okay.
Some people were up in the office doing the mailing list.
Oh, I'm so impressed.
And keeping track of all the wholesale accounts and all of that, because we were selling the pieces all over the country.
Yeah.
And I had a lady who did shipping.
Uh-huh.
We had a special little room just for shipping, and there would be people who would, after the houses are built, they have to sit for about a week or more to dry out so that they don't blow up in the kiln. A very disappointing experience.
Yes,
I
none
can
of us
tell
like.
You. You've experienced that.
We all have.
We all have.
Yes.
So we had someone who would load the kilns and then glaze the pieces and get them ready for the second firing in the big kilns that we build out in the yard across a stream. It was really a nice place to work.
Yeah, that's it. That's impressive.
We had a pony who would sneak under the fences and would grab people's lunch bags off a windowsill and run down the road.
Oh, stop.
That's really funny.
That's very fun. Wow, so you made them. They've been collected all over the country, and I suspect the world.
Oh, absolutely, the world. Yeah. I had several different sizes, and of the large pieces, I did actually design about 700.
Oh.
I did not like to do something very many times, and if you do something too many times, they become stiff and boring.
Yes.
And it becomes boring for the person who's putting it together.
Yeah.
We would do pieces in additions, say maybe an addition of 25. We would not make them all at once.
Right.
Because they get very stiff, and it's just no fun.
Yeah.
And I had worked it out so that if you lined up all the pieces in an addition, which would be pretty impossible because it was usually over a couple year period. You would find that there were different roof textures, different wall textures, different colors, and different cutout arrangements. So that each piece was unique, and they had fun names.
Oh, yeah. What are some of the names?
That's chickens and cows not allowed.
Oh.
And some would be named after the area we lived in, the Potomac House. This one is called Quilts for Sale.
Oh, that's perfect, with the quilts hanging on the front porch like that. Yeah, so you did that business for 30 years, which means I did art shows for 25 years full-time, so I know what that means. But for those of you that don't, it's making the work, firing it, loading it into boxes, loading it into the van.
And then driving to
Kingdom Come.
Somewhere fascinating.
That's right. And then unloading.
On the road again.
On the road, unloading, setting up your walls and your
and
display.
Hoping that the weather would hold.
That's right. And apparently, 30 years in the business, me 25, obviously we had our bad shows, but we had our fabulous show, so it was a successful one.
Yeah,
for
we
you.
Did.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful thing. And I still, and I haven't made the clay houses for about 20 years, but I still hear from folks who have big collections of them and who are still buying them from each other. Or I have a few left at my house that are the artist originals.
Yeah.
I would make the artist original to get the rhythm of it. Then I would make the first. They were all numbered inside the roof. Everything's written inside the roof, the title and what have you. And then my very highly trained ladies, some of whom worked for me for 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
And who were neighbors.
Oh, nice.
So they understood the valley and this wonderful place we lived. And
they would make the next iterations after your number
one. They would. And they got to choose their cutout arrangement and how they would make the shutters. So you could tell when you opened the kiln, there's a house that Marlene made, or there's a house Susie made.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting because there'd be little things that people would do that had their personality in them too.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of the studio art movement is every piece, as much as we try to make them the same, we cannot because we are not machines, which is what we love about it. So I'm going to move forward with the trajectory of your creative life. 6 decades, there's lots to cover. So then when you stopped doing the houses, and I'm sure you were ready to stop and start doing other
things.
There
were so many other things to do in clay.
Yeah.
And at that point, I retired and moved to the West Coast and lived in a very remote area and had a wonderful studio. And also in the neighborhood, there was a wood kiln. Mm. So I would go frequently and make things for the wood kiln. And I liked boats. I thought, what can I make that's a fun thing for me? So I started making boats.
Oh, nice.
And since I've made many other kinds of things, I had Asian-looking houses.
So do we call this piece in front of us here, is that a boat? It has
a
Viking flair to it,
I might say.
So they're somewhat abstracted. They're not necessarily literal boats, although
they are not literal boats at all.
So as an architectural ceramicist, you like to have creative decisions in changing things, but
absolutely.
With the boat inspiration.
And a lot of the boats are really covered with incised line designs.
Yes.
This particular one was fired in what we call a soda kiln, in which at the high point of the firing, you hurl in batches of bicarb, and it flows around in the kiln, leaving you lots of surprises.
Yes.
And it's very mellow.
It is. And that sort of lends me to kind of talk a little bit about ceramics as a field, because let's say we had a big circus tent. And so we're talking about handmade ceramics in that tent. So we have functional throne work, and then we have sculptural work. And mm-hmm. you would certainly fall into the sculptural
Absolutely.
Category.
Absolutely.
And though I do sculptural work, I am in the throne category of non-functional. So I do Sagar-fired. And the reason we talk about all these different firings is each ceramic firing gives us so many different surfaces.
Totally new surfaces and a different, such a different feeling. Your piece here with, you can see the blushes
yes.
on it, and it's really fun. And the what is the pinkish blush on that one?
So with my work, there's no glaze on the surface. There's mm-hmm. minerals tossed into the kiln in a similar way, and the pink is a copper flash. So so the heat changes the color, and the copper goes from a green to a pink to a burgundy, and the iron flashes in there go from a brown to a yellow to a salmon, and it's sort of this mix of all these colors together.
Is your Sagar kiln out? It must be outside.
Yes,
and it's absolutely. Fired with what, gas?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so one of the things that brought me to the area, St. Petersburg, was 18 years ago, I was doing art shows down here, and I discovered what was then the St. Pete Clay Company, what is now the Morian Center for Clay.
Yes.
And so in our area, we are so fortunate to have the Morian Center for Clay, whom Jen Richardson works for, teaches there, because they have all of these amazing kilns right in their backyard. So let's talk a little bit about the power of that facility.
It's very incredible. And they keep building more kilns.
Amazing.
More at what we call atmospheric kilns.
Yes.
The soda, the wood, the gas. We have a newish one that was built last year called the Groundhog Kiln.
Oh, what and does you that have, do?
It's a big beehive sort of shaped piece, and you have to crawl into it to load it, and it's fired with wood, and it takes a couple of days.
A cook, okay. Yeah, and many of the kilns, so the wood fire, for those that don't know, is a traditional Japanese firing, and in the wood fire, we have the anagama, which
we
the Morian Center
has. We have a huge
had.
Anagama. We which have is, probably the biggest one in Florida.
Okay, and that's a three-chamber kiln, and that's important because the way the flame and the heat rides through each chamber, licks the surface of the vessels, the results are so different given where it is in the kiln.
It's totally fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is really wonderful. And the Morian fires that kiln, is it once or twice a year?
Oh, no. Lately, they've been firing. We can do a reconfiguration to part of it and fire it more frequently. It's not much fun in this kind of weather.
Yes, but too hot.
We have some big kiln firings in December, and we'll have another one in January.
Yeah, that's a good time to fire.
And lately, this last year, they've been firing the smaller wood kilns more frequently because it's a lot easier. You don't have to create as much wood in the proper lengths or collect the wood.
Right, so you have to collect the wood, you have to chop the wood, you have to make it in the right size, stack it in preparation for the firing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's usually such
just
a community experience.
A very big, very big community experience. When you fire the bigger wood kilns, you can have as many as 5 days of constantly putting wood.
That's just the firing.
That's just the firing. The loading takes probably 2 to 3 days.
Okay.
Because sometimes you'll put a load in and there will be a pot sitting in a certain place and you'll say, uh-uh, that's not going to work. It's the fumes and things are going to, and the ash, because the wood ash is what's actually doing a lot of the color.
Yes.
And if the wood ash isn't bouncing properly off the pieces, you have to move them and restack the whole thing.
And then it has to cool for, what, 5 or 7 days?
At least seven.
At least
lately.
Seven. So we're talking, it's like a 14-day start to finish.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal, which is why it's amazing that we have that kiln in our area, that it's fired twice a year. And as I understand it, is the community welcome to?
Absolutely. We love, and the funnest part, of course, is the day they unload.
Oh, of course.
And everybody lines up. And it takes about 5 hours.
Yeah.
And you line up, and someone inside the kiln will hand you a pot. It's usually still a little warm.
Uh-huh.
And you pass it to the next person in line. And they're all arranged on tables in the order that they came out of the kiln.
Oh, very good.
So that you can analyze some of the flashing.
Yes.
And see what surprises it has in store for you.
It must be like a July 4th firework where you hear, ooh, ah, all those surfaces. A
lot of ooh-ahs.
Yeah. Oh, that's very fun.
And it's fun when we're firing, especially at night, because you can see flames coming out of the chimneys, especially when you put new wood in.
Yes.
Which can be every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
This stuff whooshes around.
Yeah. It's really, it is, they say it's like a breathing, living dragon on the kiln pad where this baby is firing for those 4 or 5 days as it comes to temperature, and then they shut it down and slowly, slowly cooling off. So that's a remarkable firing that we have right here in St. Petersburg. Jen Richardson, how many Anagama firings or wood firings have you been a part of?
Oh, my word. When I was in Washington and Oregon, I probably did about 10.
Mm-hmm.
It was a much smaller kiln.
Yeah.
Then here, I've probably about 10 years. I'm not as able. It's a very physical thing.
Yes, it is.
And I am 88, and so it's harder for me to hurl the wood in and to deal with it at all.
Yeah.
I, however, bring food and clap.
That's right. And you get to appreciate the work of everybody.
Oh, absolutely.
I would just like to underscore 88, six decades working in clay. You go to the clay studio every day.
I do. I love it. I get so much energy, and I teach a class.
And you teach a class.
And that's kind of more like my clay family.
Mm-hmm.
The same people seem to love taking it. And to watch everybody evolve and do their own projects is more fun.
Yeah.
But it's a big energy pop for me to be just walk in the front door at the Morian.
Yeah.
And I have my own studio there.
Yeah.
And we have 55 different artists working there.
It's a remarkable facility.
Astonishing.
It was remarkable in 2007 when I got here. I saw that place and I went, dang, it's an old train station, which is why they call it the train
station. It's 100 years old this year.
Wow, you're probably going to have a big party.
I think we are.
I think you should.
Yeah.
wow, yeah. And so that's a really wonderful place. And we're sitting in the green room talking about all the parallels we have. So one of the things, I'm going to go back a little bit to your education and your teaching. So you and I have both traveled to Italy and taught at the same place, La Meridiana.
An amazing place.
Amazing.
It's, I'd say it's been there more than 25 or 30 years. 40.
He's over 40 years
and
there.
They keep adding buildings.
Yeah.
There was something just so special. We'd be working in the studio there. We could hear the farmers out in the fields and the dogs barking. You'd have to walk through. It was horrible. We'd have to walk through an olive grove.
That's tough.
Get to class.
I know. Me too.
And then we'd have to go out to eat at some luscious restaurant Well, olive oil tastings.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, wine tastings, too.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then go to these wonderful, a day in Florence at the market.
Yeah.
So, or Siena to see things.
It was
ideal. 2 weeks, I've been 4 times.
You've been 4 times. And teaching or taking workshops?
Mostly taking workshops with Jan Edwards.
Oh, that's nice. I had the honor of teaching there. 4 or 5 different sessions, and they're 2-week sessions.
Yes.
And so you're living and working there, and the grapevines and the olive groves, and it's really wonderful. La Meridiana International School of Ceramics. If anybody's looking for a great place to take a workshop and be inspired, that
Do
would
it.
Probably be on both of our top lists, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So your classes, you teach at the Morian. I send a lot of people your way when people say they want to take a class, if it's not right, local in Gulfport. So if you haven't taken a class with Jen Richardson, you should definitely do it. Because you're a hand builder, right?
I teach just hand building. Yeah. I don't do any wheel work. I have.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I'm much more excited about the hand building. And we have people in there who've been taking the class for 5 years. Mm. We have people who just started.
Yeah.
So we have a multitude of projects depending on one's clay experience.
Yeah.
And that's really fun because the new people can see projects that others are doing that they've been working on for weeks.
Yeah.
And all the things that happen with clay.
And expanding their ideas of what else is possible.
Yeah.
What else is possible with this material. And I always say, and the wheel is wonderful. I'm a big fan. But it goes really fast. And the nice thing about hand building is you get in there, you sit, you go at your own pace, you can stop, you can think, you don't have to run with the spinning of the wheel and feel like it gets lost from you. So it's a great way to step in there and do it. So what are you working on now?
I will be working on another boat series, and I'm working with porcelain paper clay, which is a very unusual material. It's regular porcelain clay, but it has a paper fiber in it, and I can do very extreme things with slab. I couldn't work with very thin slab. I have one project where I have a big glass ball, and I tear pieces of the clay and then texture both sides of it and make bowls.
And that ball is your form, your mold, essentially, that you're working on. And you make forms
of
everything.
And that's the closest I will get probably ever to a mold.
Yeah.
I'm not a molds person.
You're not. You're a purist. You make all your own texture tools, right?
I do.
Yes.
Because I don't want to use someone else's idea in my work.
Yeah.
So I'm everything. And I love making tools, and pottery tools are everywhere. Some of my favorite tools I have found in very strange places.
Yeah, the bottom of your sneaker.
Yeah. Or Costco parking lot. I found a piece of cloth that had a marvelous texture.
Oh, yes.
And just things that you would not think of as clay tools are.
That's right. And, of course, clay is a beautiful material that records whatever you put on it.
So absolutely.
The texture tools, it's soft enough, it will record it, and then you get something there you didn't have otherwise.
And then you can enhance the texture through your glazing. And nowadays, there are so many kinds of clays that, you know, in the early days, there were maybe sort of not a lot of variety of clay bodies and colors. And now the developers have extraordinary amounts of clay types and glazes, some of which you can make yourself or many you can buy that are quite wonderful. And then the combinations of the two can be very unique.
Yeah, you have your clay body. We talked about the different atmospheric firings for any person, whatever iteration, you'll find it in the medium. It really is a remarkable medium.
It's
that's been around since
incredible.
The beginning of time, because you just
dig a hole. And it feels good.
Yeah, it really does. It feels really good.
And you really can, when you're working on a piece, the rest of the world is gone.
Yeah.
You don't know what's there, and people constantly mention that. I've been here 2 hours?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And I've had a wonderful time.
So at 88 years old, 6 decades in, going to the studio every day, what do you say is the key to your vibrant, beautiful lifestyle?
Keeping excited about things. I'm always thinking about a new idea, meeting wonderful people, and figuring things out. If you just sit around not doing anything, it would be very unhealthy for me.
Yeah, you're a doer and a maker.
Yeah, I have to be. I've always loved making things, whether it was as a little kid, doll clothes, or clay things. but I love being busy and having new ideas and seeing how they come out.
Yeah, and you know, I read a quote from you. You find inspiration in the places where utility meets humanity. So it's talking about that connection from what you make, some of it having purpose, some of the purposes beauty and inspiration, and how it reaches the person before you.
Thank you. I had quite forgotten about that one.
That's great. I did the research. Well, Jan Richardson, congratulations on a lifetime of creative achievements. What a pleasure to call you a colleague and a friend.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And ditto. Oh. I mean, we do excite each other with our work.
We do.
And by sharing it with others, then it's even more fun.
It is. And I love sharing all of the inspiration here on Art and Inspiration. It's wonderful for me to host it. So I want to thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's been great fun.
Oh, you're very good. Brenda McMahon Gallery has two exhibits I just want to tell you about. In July, Street Art Sculpture by Jay Titus. And in August, we're doing a bird show and artful fundraiser for a bird rescue organization in Gulfport, Florida. So thanks for joining us and have an artful day.